And this is something that I think a lot of people are having a hard time getting their head around. For the first time in 40 years, the front and center monetary policy objective is to rein in inflation. And that has, I think, profound consequences for both markets and the economy moving forward.
Welcome to Wealthion. I'm Wealthion founder Adam Taggart. These days, the Federal Reserve is walking a knife's edge. High inflation is forcing its hand, and to tame it, the Fed has returned to quantitative tightening, hiking rates by 0.25% and promising 6 to 7 more hikes within this year alone. But if the Fed hikes too much too fast, it risks driving the economy, which has been slowing dramatically recently, into recession. A painful recession or persisting inflation? The Fed may very likely be forced to permit one in order to contain the other. If indeed faced with that choice, which one will Fed Chair Jerome Powell pick? For an answer to this vital yet very tricky question, we're lucky to be joined by Jim Bianco of macro research firm Bianco Research. Jim was kind enough to record this interview with me a few days ago so that you Wealthion viewers would have some stellar new material to watch while I'm on the road this week. Jim, thanks so much for taking the time to do this during what I can only imagine has been a very busy week for you.
Yeah, it's a very busy week because it's March Madness.
That's right. You got your bracket filled out, right?
Yeah, and it's as we're recording, the tournament's just got started, and I think my bracket's already wrecked.
Well, look, I appreciate any attention you can give us while that's going on the side there. All right. Well, look, Jim, lots of questions for you, but I'm going to start with the general one I like to ask at the beginning of all these interviews. What is your current assessment of the global economy and financial markets?
The global economy, I think, is suffering from inflation. And I know that's an obvious statement, but it's one that cannot be underestimated. And that the biggest issue that the global economy is dealing with right now is inflation. Financial markets are coming to the realization, and I just don't mean over the last couple of weeks, but I mean over the last several months, that inflation is the biggest issue. And that's why we've seen since Thanksgiving of last year, weakness in financial markets, much, much higher interest rates, a flattening of the yield curve, more volatility in commodity markets as well too. So I think you got to start with that as a basis. Now, leading off of that, what does more inflation mean other than the standard definition of inflation? And that's a loss of wealth because my dollar, your dollar or euro or yen will buy you less goods and services every month because you'll need more of them to get the same thing every month because you've got inflation. And it's also probably going to lead to a drag in growth. And one of the things that I think is going to be leading that drag in growth is central banks, as you pointed out with the Federal Reserve the day before we recorded, is pivoting towards dealing with inflation. And this is something that I think a lot of people are having a hard time getting their head around. For the first time in 40 years, the front and center monetary policy objective is to rein in inflation. And that has, I think, profound consequences for both markets and the economy moving forward.
All right, great. And you mentioned about 8 things there that I want to drill into with you here. But let's start with what happened yesterday, which is that the, at least in the US, the era of quantitative tightening began. It's been a long time since we've seen an interest rate hike in the U.S., and it's certainly something that over the past 10 plus years is something that the Federal Reserve has done extremely reluctantly. So we now have an intentional campaign of higher interest rates going forward. I think Powell mentioned that they expect to do about 7 in the course of this year. I talked to Alfonso Pecatiello yesterday, and interestingly, he said that's exactly, but we had interviewed him before Powell came out yesterday, and Alfonso had said that that's exactly what the bond market was predicting at that moment in time. But anyways, we have at least 7 quarter points ahead of us as far as the market expects and as Powell is telling us. So you kind of mentioned this earlier, but here's my grand question, which is what happens when rising cost of capital slams into decelerating economic growth? Because it feels like we're about to learn the answer to that that question pretty quickly.
Yeah, it starts with the letter R. I think it's called a recession. is what really happens with that. And that is at the crux of the issue. Alf is right. The market is pricing in 7 or 8 rate hikes this year, somewhere in that range. And the Fed just moved to 7 rate hikes. So that's where the Fed says they're going to go. And that's where the market is priced in. Now, let me stick with that for a quick second, because there's something important to understand here. When I say the market's priced that in, that's short-term debt traders. That's Fed funds traders, repo traders, T-bill traders, short-term swap traders, and the like. They're pricing in 7 or 8 rate hikes this year. 8 rate hikes is 2%, if you want to think of it in those terms as well. But if you survey the rest of the professional management crowd, and Bank of America puts out a survey, and they just did on Tuesday a monthly survey of 300 fund managers. So this is stock managers, global fund managers, emerging market, developed markets, bond fund managers, long-term treasuries, corporates, high yield. They think there's only going to be 4 rate hikes this year. That was 2 days ago. They have consistently been way behind the market. And when you ask them, why will the Fed only go 4 times as opposed to 8? They will tell you, because if the Fed raises more than 4 times, they're going to risk a recession. They're going to risk more volatility in markets, and they're going to risk slowing the economy. And so therefore, the Fed won't do that. Now, from 2008 to 2020, that was exactly what the Fed would do. Anytime something wobbled, they'd either stop raising rates or they turn on the printing press to try and support markets or support the economy. But from 2008 to 2020, we never had inflation. It never even got above the Fed's target of 2%. But now that we've got 7.9% year-over-year CPI going much higher over the next few months, March is probably going to be a blowout number because of the big spike in gasoline prices alone. The Fed now has to pivot towards dealing with inflation. And yesterday, Powell made that very clear, that not only is the Fed's objective to bring inflation down. So when's the Fed going to stop raising rates? When inflation's back under 3. Well, what happens if the economy goes into recession? If inflation's not back under 3, they're not going to stop. What happens if markets wobble? Powell addressed that. He said it was appropriate to have, in his words, some tightening financial conditions. That's code word for he wants the stock market to go down and interest rates to go up. He doesn't want it to collapse. He doesn't want a rerun of 1987 or 2008, but he definitely wants people to think twice about spending money. So this Fed is going to be more along the lines of what we saw a generation or two ago when we talk about them being hostile towards financial markets. And the problem is it's been so long that this has happened that so many managers cannot get their head around this idea. The Fed's not going to stick it to me. This is not going to stick it to the economy because they're there to smooth that over. Well, now that we have inflation, they're going to have to deal with that. And that means that if in the process of raising rates to slow the economy, that's the objective, that it might slip into recession or markets might get messier. Well, that's just one of the consequences that we're going to have in terms of dealing with inflation. Very difficult to get people to pivot to thinking that way.
Yeah, and no surprise, because the Fed has conditioned them forever that it's going to step in right at the first moment of worry. So it really is, as you're saying here, we're watching this game of chicken that's really high stakes chicken. It's really sort of for all the marbles economically, where as these higher cost of capital begins to really bite into the economy, sends us into recession, potentially, maybe even probably, and asset prices probably, you know, come down a lot during that process as well. If inflation's not under control, we're going to see which wins out, whether the Fed is going to prioritize fixing inflation or the Fed's going to prioritize, you know, saving the financial markets and the economy. And it's interesting. I've talked to a number of experts on this program recently, and I'll tell you, you know, people are divided. Some people think that, you know, there's no way that the Fed is going to sacrifice the markets and it's going to step in at some point. And even Alf was telling me yesterday that the bond market currently was sort of forecasting those 7 rate hikes kind of flat for 2023, and then is pricing rate cuts in again in 2024. And it's the calculus there is sort of, it sees the Fed as only being able to get you know, its core rate back up to about 2% before the wheels really start coming off, and then it's going to have to pivot, right? Yeah, I know you're nodding as I'm saying this. I'm going to let you go on this in just a second, but you know, it seems really, it seems like you talked about March Madness, right? I mean, it seems like this is the madness that we need to be watching here, which is, will, you know, can the Fed bring inflation under control? And I want to ask you that question in a second, because a lot of people are saying, look, these quarter point rate hikes, given inflation that's currently raging at, you know, almost 8%, maybe even higher in March, who knows, are they really going to make any difference? I mean, it's going to take a while for them to start biting. So yeah, the big question here is when things get really tight, Powell, who already, you know, talked tough back at 2018 and then turned on a dime when things began to get a little shaky, is he really going to have the convictions of a Paul Volcker here? Or is what he's telling us is he's just trying to move the markets as much as possible by talking, but not by having to do? What do you think?
Well, a couple of things. Let me go back to the beginning of your question and highlight one thing. The Fed policy, you know, people ask if the Fed is going to make a policy mistake here. That's what you're kind of hinting at, right? They're going to cause a recession. The policy mistake was made last year. It's already done. The policy mistake last year was using the word transitory and yep. not believing that inflation has run up. Now that it has, the Fed only has trade-offs. It doesn't have a policy that's going to make everybody happy. Somebody's got to lose.
Right. It only has bad choices at this point in time.
Right. So what are the choices? On the one hand, they've got us. Us being everybody listening to this podcast, right? We're invested in markets, we own homes and everything else. On the other side, we've got 40% of the public that has less than $1,000 of savings in rents. That comes from the survey of consumer finances by the Fed that they do. Those people have made it abundantly clear through the falling approval rating of the president and Congress's approval rating that they're getting killed by inflation. They don't own a home. They don't own a home and have benefited. I don't know if you saw the day we're recording. There's an incredible story in the Wall Street Journal today. At least I think it's incredible. That according to the numbers from Zillow, the average home price in the United States went up $52,000 last year. The average income in the United States is $50,000. The average person made more money off the appreciation of their home than they did going to work last year. Well, those 40% that rent and have less than $1,000 of savings, they got zero. They don't own a home. So they keep losing and losing and losing. That's why you see in poll after poll that the Wall Street Journal had a poll at the beginning of the week. The public, you know, president's approval rating was not good. 50% of the public said the number one issue in the country is inflation. 25% of the country said the second issue in the country is Ukraine, and nothing else polled over 10%. So I think Paul's going to vote or side with, I've got to stop prices going up because these 40% are getting it bad. The rest of you, you got nice fancy educations and you got a decent high living, you know, you cinch up your belt and you're going to have to just ride this out. I'm trying to put this in direct terms.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to keep answering, but let me just ask you. So if we keep hiking, presumably we could get to a point where a recession occurs and all of a sudden those 40% of people and then maybe the other 60% start losing their jobs, right? So there's this trade-off where you're fighting one monster, but if you fight it hard enough, you feed the other monster even more, right?
So Paul addressed that and I'll address that too. There's a report called the Jobs Opening Labor Turnover called JOLTS, and it tells you how many open jobs there are in the country. There's about 11.5 million jobs open in the country right now. Somewhere somebody's advertising for a job, 11.5 million. The number of unemployed people in the country is around 8 million. So you've got about 3.5 to 4 million. I kind of rounded those numbers, but it more works out to around 3.5 to 4 million more jobs than unemployed. Now, prior to the pandemic, this was unheard of, that you'd actually have more jobs than unemployed. Now, to be clear here, not everybody's qualified for every job. Not everybody geographically lives where every job is. So the unemployment rate's never going to go to zero, because you could argue that, doesn't that sound like it should? But what Powell would say is that, look, there's 11 million open jobs. How many times do I have to raise rates before I actually chop that down to the point where people start losing jobs? And he has said in previous testimony, he could jack rates a lot, and it's still not hurt the labor market. That's the way they're thinking. And that's why if you look closely at the market, seven, eight rate hikes at the end of the year, there's a 40% chance they're going to go 50 in May. And then there's a meeting in June, and then there's a meeting in July. There's another 50-50 chance they'll do another 50. So in the next three meetings, after this one, there could be one or maybe two 50 basis point hikes in there as well too. So that's why the market is thinking the Fed could, can the Fed stop inflation? Oh yeah, they could stop inflation. Is there a cost to it? Yeah, there's a cost to it. But what is the consequence to the, the Fed throwing their hands in the air and saying, we've got too much leverage, we got too much debt, we're too dependent on a wealth effect. I'm sorry, 40%, just get used to paying $5 gas on a $15 an hour paycheck or something like that. We'll have a revolution in this country if that was the answer that they were going to give. So yes, you're right. What I'm trying to emphasize here, he's only got bad choices, because the policy mistake was last year, was not dealing with this last year and letting it run and run and run before they finally stepped up and doing something about it.
So I'm so glad we're digging into this. And I agree with that point, although I think we could say, look, there were even more policy mistakes made even further back in time by driving rates down this low, holding them here for this long, letting the economy become so dependent on these rock bottom interest rates, letting there be 20%+ of corporations becoming zombie corporations, all the wealth inequality that resulted from the Fed's monetary policy. I mean, there's a long list of monetary policies that it seems like
Can I jump in on this and say yes? And let me be specific. This goes back, I think the genesis of this, what you're saying, was 1987. The stock market crashed when Greenspan issued a one-sentence statement saying that the Fed stands willing to provide anybody liquidity who needs liquidity. And then the market turned around on October 20th, the day after the crash, and he never had to provide anybody liquidity. Then if you go, go into what he wound up doing after 9/11, mm-hmm. What we wound up doing during the great financial crisis, what we wound up doing in the pandemic, let me bottom line it for you. In every case, I'll be charitable and say, the money printing we did after in 2008 and the money printing we did in 2020 was maybe necessary. The mistake was it should have only lasted 3, 4, 5 months, and then you should have stopped. The mistake was you started money printing to bail us out of 08, and you didn't even start the process of unwinding it until 2015. You gave us emergency interest rates after 9/11 of 1%. And you didn't start unwinding it until the middle of 2004. You started printing money in 2020 when we looked like we're going to lose 20 million jobs in a month in March of 2020. You only started unwinding it yesterday. You stuck around way, way too long. Now, if you did that for a period of weeks or months, then I think you could have said, it would have been a much better policy. You wouldn't have wound up with the zombie corporations and the zero and the imbalances or anything like that. So it wasn't that we printed money in the response of a crisis that was so much the problem, is that we just never stopped it, is really where the crisis, or it's really where we baked in all these problems.
Right. There's a big difference between being a safety net and a sugar daddy. right?
Right, and exactly.
The Fed chose the latter. So kind of where I'm going with all this is, you know, and we've talked about this many times in the past, but, you know, it's all about kind of kicking the can down the road. And the heart of my question is, may we be getting to see the end of the road here where that can can't be kicked any further? Because I see there being potential where Powell has to decide between sacrificing, you know, the masses to inflation, right, or really sending the economy into a very painful recession. And in both scenarios, you know, it would love to avoid both of them, but in both scenarios, tons of people get hurt. Whoever's, you know, the incumbent in the administration is going to get voted out. You know, it's a no-win situation.
Yes. And what Paul wants is he wants the learned staff of the Fed to tell him where's the option where he could take care of both of them at the same time. And that option doesn't exist. It's more likely you wind up killing both at the same time than taking care of both at the same time. But I do think, yes, you're right. The can was, why were we able to keep kicking the can for 20 years or so? Because every time we did this, after 9/11, after the great financial crisis, in the beginning of the pandemic, what did we not have? Inflation.
Inflation. Yeah, that's the big difference.
This is the big, big difference now. And it's worthy of mentioning, there is still a latent belief, not only at the Fed, but on Wall Street, that it's still transitory. Oh, yeah, it still might spike up to 9 or 10% because of what's happened with Russia and Ukraine. But then after that, the base effects will kick in. That's just the year-over-year numbers get higher and higher to beat. And right. Then it'll start to moderate. And that is conceptually correct. I mean, inflation's not going to keep going forever. If it does, we've got much bigger problems. It will peak. But then really the question is how fast will it come down? And I would be under the camp of not very. And I think it's going to not come down fast for a couple of reasons. The imbalances that we talked about with all of the excess monetary and fiscal policy that we've had. Supply chains are radically changing. I know the last time I was on with you, I mentioned this. I'll say it again quickly. The biggest economic event of our lifetime was the shutdown. It changed the nature of work with work from home. Everybody's life is social. The things you buy, the services you use are so structured around your life going to work every day. Well, if a lot of us are not doing that, getting up in the morning and going to an office, then what we buy is changing. And I think we want more stuff, less services. And that's why we've got all of this inflation. Now you throw into that we have to start thinking about just in case inventories because of just in time, because of political instability, whether it's our tenuous relationship with China or what's happening with Russia. And you're building the case for more and more inflation that is not going to go away anytime soon. And it needs to be addressed because it just can't run because of that 40% will just keep losing and losing and losing if you let inflation run. So I think that now he has no choice but to deal with the inflation problem. I think he understands that. Whether he has the fortitude to do it, I think he understands that he's got something that no other Fed chairman has had. He's got an administration now that is demanding that he become hawkish to deal with inflation. We used to talk about Fed independence because we used to think that we had to keep the Fed independent from politicians that wanted to just turn on the money printer forever and ever. But now we've got an administration that understands they're going to get wiped out. Their party is going to get wiped out in November. There's only one thing that can save them. They've got to get inflation down. And maybe that's not enough and it won't save them. But without that, they've got no chance. And so not only are they demanding that the Fed get hawkish, they are still talking. They're making open remarks about the idea that they might impose price controls. Let's go back to the 70s gas lines all over again. Chuck Schumer, majority leader in the Senate, not 2 hours before we recorded this, is now talking about hauling the oil executives in front of Congress and asking about gas prices and talking about what they can do about gas prices. Well, that's code word for what we know. That's price controls, that they're going to put price controls and all this stuff. The problem with price controls is twofold. In the long run, all they do is create shortages. That's why we remember the gas lines. In the short run, like over the period of a few months, they might actually work. if you need the inflation rate to be down by the first Tuesday in November, price controls could do that, but at a terrible cost in 2023. And so I think the Fed even knows that. And Powell's like over there saying, wait, let me handle this inflation thing. I'll go 50. Don't start, you know, putting Warren and Sanders in charge of price controls, because that's not a good place to go. So what I'm trying to get up at is, this is a big deal, I think, at the Fed and a lot of other places, that they're taking this inflation thing deadly serious. And they are deadly serious about, if they have to get very aggressive and mete out some pain to the equity, to the asset class, or people that own assets, and to people that own homes, they're going to have to do it. And this is because we've got something we haven't seen in 40 years, is inflation.
Yeah. So it's so funny. I just wonder why the heck Powell ran for reappointment. He had the out. He could have handed this ball of complete disaster to somebody else to try to figure out how to untangle. I don't think he thought
it was going to be this big a deal when they asked him last summer if he wanted the job.
Yeah,
because they were still talking transitory at the time when he was, he met with Biden in August whether or not he wanted to have the job again. And at that point, they were still firmly on the idea that it was transitory.
Right. Which isn't confidence inspiring, that, hey, even back then he couldn't see where things were going. Cause I think a lot of us were disagreeing with their flippantly, transient view of the repercussions of all the stimulus, both monetary and fiscal.
Well, August wasn't that long ago.
Wasn't that long ago. Right.
It was 8 months ago. Right.
Yeah. We're basically letting the guy who was blind to it just a few months ago, continue to run the show from here. So I had a really nice dinner with Lacey Hunt last month, and got to hear some wonderful stories. And he talked a bit about Paul Volcker, whom he knew, and really wanted to emphasize to me that he said, look, you got to remember that Volcker was put in with a mandate, that they had had a number of Fed chairs before him try absolutely everything else before they got to that really draconian step of having to hike interest rates that much. And I'm totally with you that Powell is getting an awful lot of pressure from the Biden administrator. You got to do something about inflation, because we're going to get wiped out in November. I'm sure Powell's getting a lot of that, but I don't know yet if he's gotten as clear a mandate as Volcker had, because if you were really serious about this, given where inflation is and given all the concerns you and I have listed here, you would be much more aggressive than a quarter point here or 50 basis point rate hike there. You would be really pulling that lever pretty hard right now to try to put the brakes on what's going on here. I don't know if he's got that air cover yet. Now, maybe he will be given that at some point, or maybe they're going to oust him and put in somebody else who has that clear mandate once the wheels really come off. Who knows? What I want to dig into a little bit is, we're talking about what Powell can do, but there's a lot of things that are impacting the inflation rate that are out of Powell's control. So they're the breakdowns in the supply chains, right? Which, have taken a lot longer than everybody thought to get fixed. Now China, has gone back under lockdown for a bit. I just read that maybe there's a province or two that they're beginning to lift. But, if COVID returns to some of these Asian manufacturing nations, that's going to slow things down a bit. Then there's just general commodity supply disruptions, right? So we've got this embargo, on Russia now, based upon the war in Ukraine. And Russia's a major provider of a lot of major world commodities, right? So there's a lot of stuff that, no matter what Powell does with the interest rate, he can't instantly generate more supply over time. So he's going to really have to focus on demand destruction, because he can't control that supply lever. And then just on interest rates in general, the Fed impacts the short end of the curve, but it doesn't impact the long end. And bond investors, they've acted before the Fed, right? They started raising rates before the Fed tightened yesterday. They could do things on the long end that Powell wouldn't want them to do, but you can't control them. So what do you think about the danger of these exogenous factors that, no matter what Powell does, could make his job even harder?
Oh, yeah. So you're absolutely right. There's a lot of things that are outside of his control. Oil prices are outside of his control. The COVID lockdowns in China, which are a big one. The day we're recording again, the Shenzhen port is closed. It's the largest. It's like the second largest port in the world. It's like twice the size of the LA port. It's closed because of COVID as well, too. So they're going in the wrong direction there. But let's talk about another thing too. The OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, puts out statistics on the 30 most developed countries in the world, and they put out what's called harmonized statistics so you can compare them. When you look at their inflation measures, the US ranks among all the developed worlds as the number one country, highest inflation rate in the developed world. That's rare. Usually the US is somewhere in the middle. It's never the lowest, never the highest, but now we're the highest. They also put out another number too, or another statistic, which I think is directly one goes with the other. What country fiscally and monetarily stimulated their economy because of COVID more than any other developed country? US is also number one. And so highest inflation rate, most stimulus. So there's a lot of excess stimulus in the system that has created excess demand, which has done really pushed down the inflation rate much more than Europe or much more than the developed countries in Asia or the like. So the Fed has some tools that they can hit demand destruction. Go back to my JOLTS statistic, 3.5 million more jobs than unemployed. That's the way they think about it. Well, we could wipe out a couple of million of those jobs, available and still have enough jobs for the unemployed. I mean, that's probably somewhat flawed thinking, but that's the way they think about it. And that, so they think they've got plenty of room to go. But you're right. Powell has been very slow to get off the dime and get going on this. Well, yesterday he got going, and now the market, like I said, has got a 40% chance he's going to go 50 at the May meeting. And let's see how that unfolds and whether or not he does start to turn it up. Because I think what's going to happen over the next 60 days is the March CPI number might be a 70-year high. The highest CPI number we've had in the last 70 years was a 1.4% monthly report, September 2005. What happened? Hurricane Katrina broke a lot of energy infrastructure in the Gulf Coast, caused the price of gasoline to go up 45 cents in a month, and it resulted in a 1.4% inflation rate. Price of gasoline's up 80 cents already. And we've got food prices, and we've got already a high base to start with core inflation at 6/10 and all of the other, housing inflation and everything else. So we might see, yes, it is exogenous, but we still might see a 70-year high in the March inflation numbers. And there would be a follow through on that maybe by April, we could actually print a 10% year-over-year inflation number. And then, you could even argue to, even Paul could tell you under truth serum, yeah, this is exogenous and it's going to come down, but I still got to go 50 basis points or maybe even go 50 at consecutive meetings then at that point. So let's see, but I suspect he's going to turn it up a lot harder. He's going to turn it up the pace of the hikes a lot more.
All right. Well, so you said earlier that while the bond market was pricing in 7 rate hikes, that a lot of the sort of institutional managers right now, at least, are only believe that the Fed's going to do 4. Right. And you're just talking there that he might need to get even, more aggressive than the 7 that's currently priced in by the bond market. So it sounds like there is room there for the market to be disappointed that Powell is more aggressive than it's expecting. And so I want to get to markets and your thoughts on specific investing opportunities in just a minute. So let me ask you a question that leads into there. It's sort of a dual question, which is, given everything we talked about, what do you peg the odds for a U.S. entering recession in the next year? What do you peg those odds at? And then similarly, do you think that the current market participants may get disappointed by Powell's level of aggression here? And the impacts of all the things we've talked about, and what do you think the odds of the market having a substantial decline in the next 12 months are as well?
Yeah. So to start with the first question, I want to give you odds of a recession at least even money at this point, 50-50. I think really those expectations of 4 rate hikes could come to pass if we wind up seeing a dramatic slowdown in the economy, because a dramatic slowdown in the economy will give Powell what he wants, destroy demand, bring down the inflation rate. Look, I need the inflation rate down. It's down now. I can stop raising rates. It happened that we got a recession in 22 that caused it, or I had to raise rates to really slow things down in 23. Either way, if it slows inflation,
either way, inflation rate's down. Yep.
Yeah. Either way, the inflation rate is down. And so, but of course, most of those managers that think forward don't think we're going to get a recession either. But I do think that, and I think that the market is trying to tell us that that is in the offing. The flattening yield curve, the difference between long and short rates, has always been a good indicator of a recession. When short-term interest rates go up that above long-term interest rates, that means that the Federal Reserve is too tight with money and it's starting to hurt. The yield curve, the two difference between the two-year and the 10-year yield curve is down like around 0.2% or 20 basis points from 1.5% or 150 basis points back last September. So it has come down quite a bit. And this is unprecedented to see this much flattening before the first rate hike. Now, typically, the way it works is when the Fed starts raising rates, they don't know when they've achieved their objective. So there's the old moniker on Wall Street, right? The Fed keeps hiking till something breaks. And usually the warning sign that something's going to break is the yield curve inverts. Well, in 2019, the yield curve inverted after the ninth rate hike. In 2004 to six, it inverted after the 17th rate hike. We've done one rate hike, and it's not out of the question that the yield curve could invert before the second rate hike. So what does that mean? That means that those that argue that the Fed can't raise rates because the system's too fragile, they're right. We might take one or two rate hikes, we'll invert the yield curve, we'll have a recession, that'll get rid of inflation, and we're going to have terrible markets because we've got a recession, and we'll never get the funds rate over 1% in the process to signify got too much debt, too much leverage, we can't handle very high interest rates. On the same token, with those debt and leverage, it only took a couple of rate hikes to basically kill the economy and take care of the inflation problem. So that's where I think you could very well wind up. If you have me on in a year, say, look, we only went four times and then the Fed had to pivot. Yeah, because we probably had a recession, the inflation rate plummeted, and therefore they didn't need to be as aggressive anymore. Democrats aren't going to be happy. Hey, Joe Biden, I got rid of your inflation problem. Yes, but you did it by causing a recession months before a midterm election. That's not the way I wanted you to get rid of it, you know, and stuff. So that's what they also have to be aware of too.
Yeah, and that's the challenge for Biden right now. And I'm not trying to make this, you know, political comment, partisan comment, but it's just, you know, past elections have always told us it's the economy, stupid, right? I think that what Trump's the economy is inflation, which it's the inflation stupid, right? And basically,
and the 40%.
He's going to pick 40%. One of those two, and neither one of those wins elections, right?
right. You know, you're absolutely right. There's not enough voters that own stocks, and you know, 40% that get killed by inflation. So that's why it matters for markets. You know, because what's the Fed going to do about this inflation thing? You got 40% of the public that's screaming and yelling that they can't stand this situation. And that's why it cannot be ignored.
All right. So inflation is front and center right now. We just talked about all the wonderful things that might happen in the future here as the Fed increases the cost of capital, the Fed and the capital markets, the bond market increases the cost of capital going forward. So we got inflation risk to worry about. We got persisting inflation to worry about if the Fed, you know, acts too slowly. We've got recession risk. How does somebody go about allocating capital in this type of environment? What sectors, what potential asset classes are you looking at right now as places where, you know, the type of people who are watching this video, the average investor who's first and foremost just doesn't want to become collateral damage to all this, but also ideally, you know, wants to chart some sort of profitable long-term course out of this?
So the thing that's working right now is the inflation trade.
Our interview with Jim continues over in part two, which will be released tomorrow. To be notified when it comes out, subscribe to this channel if you haven't already by clicking on the subscribe button below, as well as the little bell icon right next to it. And be sure to click the like button too while you're at it. And if the major macro threats that Jim detailed in this interview have you feeling a little vulnerable about the prospects for your wealth, then consider scheduling a free, no strings attached portfolio review by a financial advisor who can manage your portfolio, keeping in mind the trends and risks that Jim has mentioned here. Just go to wealthion.com and we'll set one up for you. Okay, I'll see you next in part two of our video interview with Jim Bianco.